copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Welcome. My name's Chip Zimmer. Let me tell you a little bit about who I am and why I'm in front of you to start us off, and then we'll actually just go through the presentation and just see where we end up. I work with a group called Relational Wisdom. It's based in the United States. It's a not-for-profit. It was begun in 2012 by a guy named Ken Sandy. In 1982, Ken founded a group called Peacemaker Ministries, which some of you may have heard of. He wrote a book called The Peacemaker, which goes into how to resolve conflicts if you're Christian, how to stay out of court and resolve conflicts using basic scriptural principles of forgiveness, of love, of justice, all the kinds of things that we are taught to care about, but which when we get in a disagreement with someone else are often very difficult to follow through on. After 30 years of working as a peacemaker, Ken decided what he really wanted to do was try to get in front of conflict, get ahead of the curve, and to help people learn some of the lessons that he'd learned in 30 years of serving as a mediator. And so he started Relational Wisdom, and Relational Wisdom 360 is the ministry. We actually will be doing a seminar on Thursday morning if anyone's interested in that. One of the things, though, that we've learned as we work with people both in conflict and out of conflict is the value of empathy, just how important empathy is. And we thought it would be fun to have a workshop where empathy is actually the topic. And so that's why I'm here. I've worked with Ken since 2001. My background is I'm a lawyer. I've worked a lot as a mediator. I worked as a diplomat in Africa and Latin America on behalf of our government, United States government. And then I worked for Peacemaker Ministries for 14 years, and I've worked for Relational Wisdom now for 2.5 years. So I have a lot of experience as a mediator. I like to think I'm empathetic. My family might not agree with that, but I do the best I can, like all of you. Let me open us with prayer, and then we'll start. Father, thank you for this time. Thank you that you brought us here to consider this great topic of what it means to live empathetically, what it means to serve you by really understanding other people, by being able to crawl into the position they're in, to think their thoughts, to understand their feeling from the inside as a basis for loving them and for serving them better. We ask your blessing on this time. Please bless my words. May they be pleasing in your sight, and all of our thoughts we commit to you in Jesus' name. Amen. So, why empathy? What I'd like to do to start out with is just, we will go periodically to my asking you to do a little bit of talking to your neighbor. And so this first question, I just want to raise this topic, is why empathy? Why does empathy matter? Why is it important? What I'd like to do is just have you spend a minute or two sharing with your neighbor your thoughts on that. Why does empathy matter? Why is it important? Why would we spend an hour and 15 minutes at a workshop considering it? Okay. Now, what I'd like to do is to get some of your ideas. And so I'm going to ask you to share some of what you think about empathy, why it's important, why it matters, what kind of a difference does it make. Just share that with the rest of us. And I'll tell you right at the outset, I'm not looking for right answers. Okay, this isn't a trick question. One of the beauties about being in a group of Christians like this is that we all come from different perspectives, we have different ideas, and we enrich each other with the different points of view that we have on a question like this. So I'd like to get us to share a little bit of the different perspectives that everybody in this room brings to this topic on empathy. So I'd like to have you just raise your hand and say, here's what it means to me. Yes?
We don't stay outside of the problems of the people around us.
So if we're being empathetic, we're not staying outside of the problem. We don't stay outside of it. We actually come into the problem because we're trying to understand them. Great, thank you. What else?
I realized that without empathy, I cannot be a good leader in the community.
Okay, without empathy, I can't be a good leader. Okay, it's critical for me to be able to understand the people that I'm supposed to be leading. Absolutely, good. What else? Yes?
I think people are more open to work on their problems if we first show empathy and then confront them.
Okay, so people are more open to work on their problems if we first demonstrate empathy, if we're willing to listen and understand the problem from their point of view, okay, before we confront them or try to begin to deal with the problem. Good, great, thank you. What else? One more. Well, I heard a lot of conversation. Don't be shy.
Just to add to this, it's really hard to fix a problem if you don't understand the problem. Here, usually with empathy, we can fix some problems, not just actively, passively understanding and be empathetic to someone.
Yeah.
We are fixing their problem just to understanding and resonating.
Yeah, I like that. We can't fix the problem if we don't understand the problem. And so a big part of being empathetic is being able to understand the other person's point of view, where they're coming from. A lot of empathy has to do with being able to read the emotions of what the other person is going through. In fact, a strict definition of empathy mostly focuses on emotions, on feelings, on being able to feel, to experience what another person is feeling or experience. It also has a cognitive element. It's being able to see things from their perspective, to understand the intellectual position that they're taking on it, what it is that they're trying to accomplish, what they're thinking. But a big part of learning to be empathetic is also learning to read, to pick up on what emotions is this person experiencing, and how are those emotions impacting whatever conversation I'm having, whether it's just a normal everyday discussion about something or whether there's some problems that need to be resolved. The more I understand about where they are, the easier I'm going to find it to actually begin to work with them successfully. I've done a lot of work as a mediator. As I mentioned, one of the great skills that I've learned is the importance of empathy, because the more I can crawl into the points of view that the people that I'm working with are taking, the more I understand what they're thinking and what they're feeling, I really begin to get a sense of, I understand it, I get it, I understand why they're saying this, and I understand why they're saying this. That all makes sense. Now I'm in a position to begin to do some dialogue creation between them and help them to begin to understand one another. And if I'm just working one-on-one with someone, the more I can understand that person, the easier it's going to be for me to work with them to try to draw out the information that I need to be able to figure out where do we go from here. Makes sense? Can you see how empathy is going to be important? So that feeling element, that emotional element, is a key element. And you don't see that too much in the Christian community. You very seldom hear a sermon preached on emotions. Okay? At least I haven't heard one in a long time. And yet emotions are part of God's creation. Okay? He made us to be emotional people. Okay? We are wired to respond emotionally, to have feelings. And so learning how to work with that is a big part, not only of becoming a mature Christian, but being able to empathize with people and work successfully with people. I want to show you a video clip. It actually comes from Thailand, so there's subtitles here that you're going to read. But the words aren't important. Watch for the emotions in the people that are shown in this clip. And when we get done, I'm going to have you come back and say what emotions it was you saw and where you saw them. Okay, I'll let you discuss it a little bit first, but I'd like you to be looking for emotions, identify what you see, and then let's see if we can pick them out. Okay. The ability to understand and share the feelings, and I'd expand that and say the experience of another person. To understand the feelings, understand the experience, really be able to crawl on the inside of another person's life. That's what, to be able to understand from the inside what another person has experienced. So we're not going to actually talk about this with your partner. Tell me, what emotions did you see expressed here in this little video.
Joy.
Mm-hmm. And joy, you could see that on the face, in the eyes. Yeah, absolutely. Good. What else did you see?
Satisfaction.
Okay, great. What else?
Wondering.
From the people, yeah. That old guy kept shaking his head like, what in the world are you doing? You know, you must be crazy, almost saying. Great. What else? Gratitude. Okay. Maybe surprise when he sees that little girl in her school uniform because she now has enough money to be able to afford to go to school. Joy, as was said, that he's making a difference in the world. Now, you know, this is done in Thailand, which is not a Christian country, but the message for us as Christians is this ought to be normative, huh? I mean, this is what for us it means to be in service to the world around us. And for him and for us, it begins with empathy, to begin to crawl on the inside of how someone else might be feeling, imagine their world, and then use that as a tool to begin to respond, to meet their needs. So empathy, the ability to understand and share the feelings, share the experience of another person. But don't stop there. Actually begin to use that, as we see demonstrated in the video, to be a blessing to other people. So if that's what empathy does, what does a lack of empathy do? What are some of the problems that it might cause? Basically, it weakens relationships. And one of the things we hear time and time again when we're working with people in marriages is that one of the spouses, usually the wife, says, we have no emotional connection. Okay? He doesn't understand me. We don't have any kind of emotional life. He doesn't share who he is, doesn't share his feelings with me. When I'm sad, when I'm happy, I just get a blank stare. Okay, so it can really damage the quality of a marital relationship and our ability to be able to connect with the husband or wife that God has given us. When teens rebel, my own kids did this from time to time and said, you know, Dad doesn't understand us. He doesn't understand me. All he does is lecture me, which is true. He doesn't spend any time listening to me and finding out what matters to me, what's important to me. And it's a big lesson for me to learn, to begin to listen to my children as they had things they wanted to share so that I could become part of their lives. That didn't mean I agreed. And sometimes we had to make decisions. I had to make decisions that they weren't happy with. But I'll tell you, the more that I brought them into the conversation and was able to have them feel as though I was listening to them, that I'd heard what they cared about, the better the outcome became. That even when I made a decision that they didn't like, they felt as though they'd been heard, they'd been loved. And a big part for my kids of being loved and accepted was being listened to. That was a lesson I had to learn. Some of you may have found that out as well in your own family lives. You know, pastors struggle lots of times, not because of bad theology, not because their hermeneutics are poor, not because their Hebrew is suffering. All of the kinds of topics that we spend time on studying when we go to divinity school, theological school, very few of those actually cause the downfall of pastoral ministry. You know what it is? In your experience, what's the biggest impediment to successful pastoring? Where we live, it's broken relationships. It's the pastor and the senior staff not getting along. It's the pastor and some of the leaders in the church, the elders or deacon. It's members of the church who basically say, you know, he's a great preacher, but he doesn't care for us. He doesn't watch over us. He doesn't come visit us when we're sick. He doesn't send us notes. He doesn't phone us when we're having problems, doesn't check in on us. So again, this idea of having empathy, of making it a priority to understand and connect with people, becomes something that's really important. For busy pastors, actually for any of us, we're all busy, it's hard because it requires time. It requires a commitment. I have to be present for people. I have to be willing to talk with people and to listen to people and to ask questions about what's going on in their lives. But if that's not a priority, I'm probably going to find that sooner or later my relationships are going to struggle. And then that's going to take a lot of time to work through successfully. In the workplace, we hear this frequently as well, where someone, a dissatisfied employee, says, you know, all I am is a production unit. All I do is make sure that I'm here on time, do my work, and leave. My employer really doesn't care about me, doesn't care about my ambitions, doesn't care about what I might want to do that actually serve the company better or the business better, the workplace, wherever it is. Okay, but empathy, if I show it to the people that I supervise, will go a tremendous way in me helping me to understand who they are, what's important, what conditions help them to work most successfully, what they want to get out of the job besides a paycheck, because I hope there's more to it than just showing up, putting in the time, and getting paid at the end of the month. Okay, I want to see a commitment. And the more I understand them, the more it helps me to build those kinds of relationships that may make for a successful workplace, make for a successful team kind of setting. So I want to distinguish here between three related concepts. And if you have your app open, you'll be seeing this in the notes. The first is empathy, the ability to feel what others feel. And we've talked a little bit about that. Any questions before we go on what empathy is? We'll talk in a little bit about how we can develop empathy. Okay? But just what it is. At some level, everybody here has empathy. You have, in one way or another, been able to experience what someone else is going through. Okay? And that is what we want to try to cultivate. That's what we're aiming to improve. The next one, closely related compassion, builds on empathy and is a deep concern for another person, accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate suffering. So empathy helps me understand their world from the inside. Compassion, then, is a desire to do something, a deep concern for what they're facing, for what they're struggling with, and the desire to actually do something to begin to help to deal with it, to help to alleviate it. And then the third concept, closely related, consolation, action to alleviate or lessen the grief, sorrow, or disappointment, especially when there's something of a struggle going on in the person's life. And often it'll begin with empathy, really understanding the world from where they are, from inside of their experience, which leads me to want to be compassionate toward them, to have a strong desire and concern to be of help to them, which then actually leads to action, doing some things that help to alleviate whatever point of struggle it is that they're facing in their lives. And so there's kind of a flow that happens from empathy to compassion to consolation, or maybe just action. Doing something to be of service is a better way to think of that. Can you see how that flow plays out and how all of this would flow? And it really begins with empathy. The more that I can begin to appreciate what someone is going through, the stronger and clearer my compassion, because I'll really have a good sense of where their struggle is, which helps me then know how specifically can I serve this person, can I help this person. Questions on that? What I want to do is we're going to take a look at another video clip. Let me set this up for us. This clip comes from a movie called Stepmom. And it involves, the scene we're going to see is between two women, one of whom is the current wife and the other the former wife of the man who is one of the stars of this film. Now, these two women, the current wife and the current wife is much younger than the other wife. The man walked away from his previous wife, he divorced her, and has remarried this younger woman, and they have children. In the meantime, after the divorce, the older woman, the ex-wife, has become sick. She has terminal cancer and is dying. These two women have fought throughout the movie over parenting, over just about everything, as you can imagine. It's been a terrible situation. But now at the end, they're coming together because they realize that the younger woman, as the stepmother, is going to have to parent these children successfully. And they're going to be having this conversation over lunch in which some of what the concerns are that they have are shared. So what I'd like to do is to show the clip, and then to have you, as you're watching this clip, look for where you see empathy in the movie. And remember, empathy is not only going to be the words, it's going to be the facial expression, it's going to be the whole way that someone expresses themselves, their body. Look for where you see compassion. See if you can pick it up. Where is one person, one woman, showing compassion for the other woman? And then finally, is there any consolation? Is there any action that's at least proposed or suggested as a way for things to begin to move forward? So that's the assignment. Any questions on that? So you're looking for empathy, compassion, and action or consolation. Okay, so here's the clip.
I never wanted to be a mom. Well, sharing it with you is one thing. Carrying it alone the rest of my life. Always being compared to you. You're perfect. They worship you. I just don't want to be looking over my shoulder every day for 20 years, knowing that someone else would have done it right. Done it better. The way that I can't.
What do I have that you don't?
You're Mother Earth incarnate.
You're hip and fresh.
You ride with Anne.
You'll learn.
You know every story. Every wound. Every memory. Their whole life's happiness is wrapped up in you. Every single moment. Don't you get it? Look down the road to her wedding. I'm in a room alone with her, fitting her veil, fluffing her dress, telling her no woman has ever looked that beautiful. And my fear is that she'll be thinking, I wish my mom was here.
And mine is, she won't. But the truth is, she doesn't have to choose. She can have us both. Love us both. And she will be a better person because of me. And because of you. Their past, and you can have their future.
What I'd like you to do is turn to your conversation partner and answer that first question there. Where did you see empathy? Where did you see compassion? And where did you see consolation or action? Okay. Now look, remember, I'm not looking for right answers, okay? We have a lot of different perspectives in a room like this. Empathy may have to be inferred. If it's empathy that leads to compassion, and you observed compassion, then there was probably empathy present as well. So it's okay to say, I think empathy was here at this point, even though it may not be something where one of the actresses said, I'm feeling very empathetic for you at this point, okay, which would be much more of a tip-off. Real life isn't like that. But we infer it because we know that compassion comes from being able to understand what another person is going through. So where did you see empathy? Or compassion?
Okay.
find it easier to start at the back here in this first movie.
Start at the back.
The consummation is the moment when they agree she's the one for the past and she's the future. So they agree on this.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's an action that they're agreeing on. This is how I can alleviate the suffering. We can mutually alleviate the suffering and the pain that we're going through at this point, is by understanding that I've had their past and you can have their future. Yeah, so that's consolation. Great. Anything else in the way of consolation that people noticed? Yeah.
The elder mother said, you are learning to the younger. Mm-hmm. So she felt the pain that she's not able to be a good mother, but she still was able to say, you are learning.
Yeah, you'll learn. Okay, so it looked as though she was really taking in the pain and the uncertainty that younger woman was experiencing. She was really feeling that and saying, I get it. You know, I was a young mom once too, but you'll learn. That's what happens. You're a parent long enough and you start learning how to do it. Right? It's real on-the-job training. Great, thank you. What else did you notice that touches on empathy, compassion, or consolation, actions moving forward?
The tears.
The tears. And what did they tell you?
How she, the older mom, she feels with her. She understands her.
Yeah. Yeah.
How she feels like she's not good enough. Maybe I will not be good enough because, well, you're her mom and I'm just the replacement. So just the idea of, yeah, I feel for you, that must be hard, and we've been fighting during the whole time.
Yeah.
But still, we're in the same boat.
Yeah, I mean, her children are now going to be under the care of this new mother, this young mother who has no idea what to do. So the tears, understanding the situation that she's in, maybe feeling a little bit sad that she's not going to be there to be a tutor, someone who can help this new mom learn how to play the same role that she did toward her children. Remember, she's perfect in the stepmom's eyes, so she has big, big shoes to fill, doesn't she? Good, thank you. What else? Anything else that you'd like to add to this?
Well, they both visualize the future of the daughter, and for me, I felt very touching that they both are afraid that the daughter will say, I wish my mom was here, but the other was, I am afraid that she won't.
Yeah.
And so there, I think they felt the empathy and compassion towards each other very strongly.
Yeah, a real sense of mutual empathy and compassion, because they each recognize that who their daughter chooses to remember on that day is really out of their hands. Mm-hmm. It's going to be up to the daughter. Mm-hmm. And this mom, having now raised the daughter for, you know, a certain period of time, I can't remember how old she is having to let her go because she's passing away. And the new one's taking it on. Yeah, very real fears that they're experiencing, and they can't control what the daughter does. And so being able to sympathize, to be compassionate toward one another, and encourage one another, I think is a real big part of what's taking place in this conversation. So we see in the Susan Sarandon character, the older woman character, almost a handing off of the responsibility of being the parent to this daughter in particular, but the other children as well. Okay, and wanting the best for her kids, which means despite the fact that they've been battling, she has to want the best for this new mom if she's going to be able to do a good job. Okay? Empathy, compassion, consolation, or action, they go hand in hand. What did you notice as you looked at this movie that began to tell us that there was something happening in the way of emotions? There was some level of feeling, and that they were beginning to connect at that deeper level, at that feeling level. What did you see? What did you observe in the two actors that were playing this role? Tears was mentioned, okay? One big tip-off. What else? Yeah?
They were looking directly into each other's eyes.
Yeah.
They were speaking in a very low and slow voice.
Low and slow tells what? It tells, this matters to me. I'm really struggling to get this out. Okay, and I want you to pay attention to what I'm saying, because this is important. And direct eye contact. You know, in most cultures, direct eye contact means I'm really with you. I'm paying attention to you. Some cultures, it's impolite. But in the culture I live in, and probably that most of you live in, it's a sign of respect. It's a sign of value when you look at somebody. And looking away while they're talking is disrespect. It means I'm not really interested. So they're intently gazing at each other. Great. What else? Slower speech, tears, looking at each other. Anything else?
Cold. They were
very
quiet. They really were calm, listening to each other.
Very calm, very much listening to each other. Actually responding to what the other person said in a meaningful way. Okay, great listening is such a big part of learning to be empathetic. Because it's as we listen to a person, and not just the words, the tone of voice, the level of the voice, the facial expression, okay? The set of the eyes, whether they're smiling or frowning, all of those kinds of things tell us a great deal about what's going on inside of another person. And so the reason we show these clips is we want you to see what it is that's happening when people are being compassionate. Because these are actually skills that we can begin to learn. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to be teary every time somebody, you know, tells you a sad story. But looking at the person, okay, really listening to the person and responding to what they say in a meaningful way, okay, not denigrating it, not putting it down as though it's not worthy of your time to hear that, okay, paying attention, sitting upright, all these little things are ways that we can be with someone, show that we value them, which then gives them the courage to open up and to share with us what it is that they're really concerned about, okay, and those are skills that help us be able to be more empathetic, build better relationships, and ultimately serve the Lord by the way that we deal with people. The biblical basis for empathy. I'm going to talk about three things here. The model for empathy is God Himself in the form of Jesus, God the Father, the Holy Spirit. We can think of a lot of passages. I haven't been able to think of one that mentions empathy, and those of you who are Bible scholars maybe know, but there are a ton of passages about compassion. The Lord, the gracious and compassionate God, right? Exodus 34, God's introducing himself to Moses. This is who I am. I have compassion. I extend my love and grace to thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression. Okay. All of these are characteristics of the Lord's compassion. Psalm 103 says, He remembers how we were formed. He knows that we are dust. Now that almost gets to empathy, understanding our very nature, that we are created. We're created in His image. We're fallen. Okay, but God provides the model, and there's a great amount of scripture which helps us understand what it looks like to be compassionate in the same way that He's compassionate. And you know what my favorite one is? It's actually Romans 5:8. While we were yet sinners, what did God do? He sent Christ to die for us. Boy, talk about compassion. We couldn't save ourselves. There's nothing that we could do to breach that chasm between sinful people and a holy God. And what does He do in His compassion? He takes the initiative and He sends Jesus to live and to model for us, to live the perfect life, to die on the cross, so that through faith in Him, we can have eternal life with God. That is compassion, laying down our lives for other people. Okay? The motive for empathy is that we're commanded to be empathetic. We're commanded to be compassionate. We're commanded to love other people in the same way Christ has loved us. Okay? That basically is what's behind this. And again, we can think of a ton of scriptures that point us in this direction. And there are lots of different passages that spin off from this, that tell us, for example, in Colossians, I think it's Colossians 3, you know, be kind, compassionate, long-suffering, loving one another, just as in God, Christ has loved you. Okay, these kinds of passages really speak to us in terms of what it looks like to begin to live this way and to reach out. The motive for empathy is that we are called to be like Christ. And Christ has been compassionate on us, and so we are to be empathetic and compassionate toward others. The method of empathy is that we meet needs, and we try to meet people where they are. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Okay? That's what it means to be empathetic, to understand this is a time of rejoicing with you. And being empathetic in that circumstance means I'm going to rejoice as well. This is a time of grieving. This is a time of tears for you. And so, because I want to be with you, because you're important to me, I share in that. And so I grieve with you. I cry with you, if necessary, over your loss. Okay? So, model is the Lord. The method is to do what the Lord tells us to do. I'm sorry, the motive is to do what he tells us to do because of the great love he has shown us. And the method is to go out and engage people and to live lives of empathy, compassion, and of consolation. And as we do that, we build God's kingdom, we help build great relationships, and we further his purposes in our lives and in the lives of the people that we're gifted to serve, that he brings before us. I want to talk just a little bit about the neurology of empathy, because these days there's been a ton of research done by physiologists, by brain scientists who, you know, put all kinds of wires into people's brains and then test them to see how the brain responds. And you can actually measure how all of this begins to take place in the human brain. It's amazing what these folks that do this kind of research are finding out. And basically what they're learning is that we are wired for empathy. This is how God created us. It's part of our brain structure. The way that the neurons are put together actually generate empathetic feelings, that we have the ability through what are called mirror neurons. We have the ability through mirror neurons to actually experience what someone else is experiencing. Isn't that amazing? So if as you were watching that movie, if you felt yourself tearing up a little bit or stepping into the position of one of the women, maybe the woman that was dying and having to turn her children over, if you felt a little bit of teariness, it's not unusual at all. It's mirror neurons. These neurons get fired in our brains by what we observe in other people. And so that our brains actually, through all the chemicals that are released and the way the pathways are structured, we actually begin to experience the same feelings as the person that we are with. We respond in the same way because our neurons are actually moving us emotionally to say, have those same feelings. And as we learn more about where they are, maybe even perhaps to begin to think the same thoughts. This is all intentional. This isn't an accident of evolution. God put us together this way. And so empathy is something that seems to be wired into us. It's a matter of creation, as I understand it. In other words, it's not reserved for Christians. And we can think a lot of times out there. It's present in Christians and non-Christians alike. And we can regularly see empathy lived out in the world around us. I mean, some of the ways that I see it most naturally, just in the culture that I live in, is disaster relief. We have organizations that are geared, that are put together in order to be able to help respond to disasters. But just recently, last fall, there was some terrible flooding. A hurricane came through our state of Texas and just really flooded a lot of those areas. And a great number of the rescues weren't by the fire department, they weren't by the Red Cross. They were by guys who owned fishing boats and saw on their television that someone over here was stuck on their roof because the water was so high. And they got their boat revved up and they went over and they got them on board and they rescued them. Hundreds and hundreds of people. Okay? That's empathy. That's the presence of this God-like emotion that we experience lived out in the world around us, even by people who don't know the Lord, but who, because they're feeling empathy and compassion for others, act in ways that are of ultimate service to the community. So how much more for us who do know the Lord to respond in those kinds of situations where we see a neighbor in need, Christian or non-Christian, okay, where someone within our family, someone within the church, where we have the ability to begin to serve them and to meet whatever problem it is that they are dealing with, to help them meet it. empathy, compassion, consolation help us begin to move in that direction. God calls us to live empathetic and compassionate lives. And we have this opportunity every day, don't we? It's not reserved for special occasions. It's something that happens within our families, something that happens within our churches, as we prioritize and take time to be with people and to find out what's really going on and how it is that we can begin to be of service to them. Two types of empathy. And the first is really the skill type of empathy that we can begin to learn. It's called cognitive empathy, sometimes called perspective taking. It's a deliberate, conscious, intellectual process where, as we observe others, use all of our powers of observation, okay, not just what we hear, but what we see with our eyes, what we can tell from their facial expression, from their tone of voice, okay, and a conscious intellectual process to observe others, use our imagination and logic to discern what they must be thinking and feeling. Okay, so it's mostly something that's happening at the intellectual level, but I can take someone's perspective, and that's a skill that I can actually learn to do. As I observe you, I can ask questions about what's going on. You know, is there an area that I can help you with? What are your needs right now? And all of those kinds of things are what would be bound up in this whole package called cognitive empathy. Okay, that's something that we can each learn how to do, how to be better at. And the more time we spend on this with people that we are responsible for or responsible to, the stronger the relationships we'll have and the easier it's going to be when real problems arise. I tell you, it's so much easier to work through a conflict if you have a good relationship than if you have a bad relationship. The time to begin building good relationships is before their troubles, before their problems. So it's worth the investment. Effective empathy, sometimes called emotional empathy, is a more spontaneous process that causes us to actually feel what others are feeling, as though their emotions were contagious. Most of us have probably had that experience. That's the mirror neurons kicking in. It's why sometimes, if you've ever been in a nursery where one baby begins to cry, what happens? All the other babies begin to cry. And these researchers think it's because of the mirror neurons. Okay, they're mimicking. They're actually experiencing and mimicking what it is that's going on with the other children in the room. Winston Churchill was not known for his great sensitivity to other people. Okay, he was not what you would call an empathetic guy. But shortly after he became prime minister, he learned that his predecessor in office, who had been prime minister, named Neville Chamberlain, and who had entered into an agreement with Germany that divided up part of the Czech Republic and gave it to Germany, was a precursor actually to World War II. He learned that Chamberlain was dying of cancer, terminally ill, wasn't expected to survive more than a few weeks. He knew that Chamberlain, having seen how wrong he was, how terribly he misjudged Hitler and Hitler's ambitions because England was now under attack by Germany, how terribly he misjudged and must be feeling tremendous remorse and tremendous regret. And so he arranged with his aides that Chamberlain would only be brought good news, only positive news about how well the war was going up until the point that he died. Okay? That's an example of cognitive empathy, of putting yourself in someone else's shoes and then doing what needs to be done in order to serve that person. Effective empathy, let me give you a sense of what that is by just telling a personal story. My stepdad died about 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And after my mom had gone through this, I was with her and she said, "I'm just feeling terribly lonely. I just feel abandoned and isolated." And in that moment, when she said that she felt alone, I immediately knew what she was going through because I've had a similar experience. As a young man, I went to live in a country where I hardly spoke the language, and I felt totally isolated, totally alone. And there was this moment of deep empathy between us, and I could say, "I get it. I understand what you're going through. I'll be here. I'm going to help you get through this." Seven ways to empathize, to exercise empathy. And this gets into the skill building piece. Enlist all of your faculties and resources. Okay, we've talked about this a little bit. Your eyes, your ears, okay, your imagination, all of your powers are of observation, to look at the other person and to figure out what is it that's going on with them. Just, you'll pick up a lot of clues just from the way that they're behaving before you. Move in physically, verbally, emotionally. Move in physically. Sit by leaning toward them. That conveys, at least in most Western cultures, a great deal of interest. Eye contact, as was mentioned, is something that can be extremely helpful. Verbally, okay, make sure you're using a tone of voice that's kind, one that's caring, okay, rather than one that's demanding or demonstrating impatience. And emotionally, our own emotions can be calmness, they can be interest, the kinds of things that will help them to really begin to want to open us up to us. Pray for discernment. We're taking in a lot of data. We have to try to discern what it is that's bothering them. So the Lord will provide that discernment. He provides wisdom when we need and want it. Ask caring questions. Help me understand what you're struggling with. Or just, that sounds hard. Would you want to tell me more about that? I'd like to see if I can be of help. Those kinds of questions that demonstrate concern can go a long way toward helping someone be comfortable and being willing to open up. Think deliberately. If I were in their shoes, what would I be feeling? What would it be like to be them? Okay, take their perspective and go from there. Help in meaningful ways. Whatever it is that we can do to be of service, this may be a wonderful time. And if I can't help directly, maybe I know someone who can. Maybe I can help find a resource for them. And finally, yield your convenience, your pride, and your resources. Okay, building relationships takes time. It has to be a priority. But in the end, if it's an important relationship, it's going to be worth it. We have a lot of information available on the website for relational wisdom, including we have a, and this will be online, but I have a physical copy of it here. If you look under the resources drop-down, okay, you'll see that there are what are called free downloads. Okay, this is 7 steps to empathy. It goes into a lot more detail about the 7 steps that I just covered. So if you're interested in knowing more about this, our website is rw360.org, and you can download this and have a lot more of the information on how to develop the skill, at least of cognitive empathy. All right, then. Thank you so much. If we can be of help, I'm around during the rest of the conference. The website's available. Please let us know. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your attention.